The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
During the week trending, we're also going to be discussing what students get up to in their post-leaving cert holidays. But let's start with Ro McDermott, who of course you know so well from the movie spot here on The Last Word every Thursday. She's the film editor with The Hot Press and advice columnist with The Irish Times as well. And we've the professor of marketing at the Michael Smurfit Business School in UCD, Damien McLaughlin, with us as well. But let's start with that Air Canada story, Ro. Ro, I know you travel a lot. You fly transatlantic quite a bit. Can you imagine the circumstances of waking up and finding that there's nobody else on the plane with you and that everyone's gone and it's locked?
This story is an anxiety dream come to life. So this woman, Tiffany Adams, she fell asleep off from Quebec to Toronto. And when she woke up, she was freezing cold. She was still buckled into her seat. No one was on the plane. And her phone immediately died. She tried to phone one of her friends, text one of her friends saying, I'm on this plane on my own. Tried to FaceTime her friend. The phone immediately died. There was no lights on the plane. There was no power on the plane. And she's there going, how do I get off? So she went through the plane, managed to find a flashlight, managed to open one of the doors, except then it's a 40, 50 foot drop to the tarmac. So she spent ages flashing this light against the wall opposite her, trying to attract some attention. And basically a maintenance worker, a luggage handler, finally found her. But she was there. She didn't know how long she was there. She was completely stressed. And the airline has kind of apologised but said, oh, so sorry, we overlooked this. How do you overlook a passenger still being on board?
Very difficult. Like, academics fly as well as that, Matt. And I can't believe, first of all, she's 40 or 50 feet in the air. That means she was on an A3-something, a big plane. So it wasn't as if it was a small number of people. It was a large plane with a large number of people in the crew. There's no way she was left in the back seat. Second thing is, if she'd been flying from Quebec into Manitoba or some small airport, that's fine. But Toronto's I've flown to Toronto many times, is a great global airport. There's no way this happened. This is the imagination of somebody who wanted a good Twitter story.
This has happened on this airline 3 months ago. There was a 69-year-old woman called Pamela Prescott who is visually impaired and needs a wheelchair, and she was left on the plane. The staff
slightly
said,
different situation,
we will get
then
someone back to a wheelchair, and she was left on
terrible
the plane.
That's terrible.
Well, that poor soul was forgotten about. But she wasn't left on the plane overnight. I fell asleep on the plane. I woke up, my phone just happened to waste. And then, do you ever see when the stewards actually open the door? I always wonder how they don't fall out. So somebody who didn't know what they were doing was able to open the door on an A3 big plane and get the door and not fall out because there's no steps there.
But hold on.
Multiple accounts of this happening throughout the years.
Because think about it. Okay, I can see immediately this doesn't sound very believable because the air stewards and stewardesses would go through the flight and make sure that every seat...
And the cleaners.
Hang on a second. See, a lot of flights don't have cleaners coming on anymore.
Or else they're cleaning right before the next flight rather than at the end of that one.
Not on Air Canada.
And I was talking to Michael Sheridan was on the programme last night, our motoring correspondent. He flew back from Frankfurt the other night. He said the plane was practically deserted. He said there was hardly anyone on the flight. Now, if you have a situation like that where there's maybe less than one third occupancy, you wouldn't notice necessarily if there's loads of empty seats if somebody is slumped down a little bit asleep.
And there are several accounts of this. Back in, I think it was 2010, a Michigan woman fell asleep on a flight from to Philadelphia, and she was stranded in the cabin for more than 3 hours. And she actually tried to sue the airline for false imprisonment. And I couldn't find out whether that was successful. I'm guessing they gave her a rather big handout. I'm terrified
of lifts. So my friends send me stories all the time of people who die in lifts. And those stories are not true. There are stories from pubs that gather legs. But one thing,
urban
that,
myths.
The thing I can't believe in this story is that
myths.
She was said she was freezing, but if she's on a plane her own, presumably she had no shortage of blankets.
I'm sure everything
she didn't have to argue for
away
a blanket.
Have you not been on a plane when, like, at night time when they don't have, when the air conditioning is bleeding? I absolutely believe that was freezing if it was parked.
Depends if you're
completely
up in the air, though.
And depends what time of the year. Anyway, it's June in Toronto, so it's not going to be cold there. It's the whole thing, Matt's one of those great stories from the pub. I hope she gets on Oprah or Ellen DeGeneres or
she
the Matt Cooper show.
Majors,
I mean,
anyway,
that's real fame.
Another
story,
which is the type of thing you might think of urban myth, the Michelin starred restaurant where the Michelin star chef was putting chicken stock cubes into vegan curries. What do you make of this, Damien?
It's a strange story. It's a strange story, Matt. Michelin star restaurant in New York, the Tamarind Kitchen, which I looked up. That's a pretty fancy Indian restaurant. A chef was sacked because he complained about chicken stock cubes being used in vegetarian and vegan dishes. It turns out the famous chef said, "Let's not tell the customers
because nobody would know. Nobody would notice.
Most of my vegetarian and vegan friends notice in soup that there is a chicken stock in it. I think you could taste it. I mean, chicken stock is delicious, Matt, as you know. I mean, you know, if your mum makes it, she makes a soup with it or makes a gravy, it's delicious.
I find it amazing. First of all, that a Michelin star chef didn't make his own stock. He's going into the supermarket and buying Knorr like the rest of us.
Good for Knorr. What's that good? A Michelin star chef would use them, right?
But I think what's so disturbing is that it was the assistant manager told the owner of the restaurant this was happening because several of the staff members were understandably incredibly concerned about this, because this isn't about betraying the consent of vegetarian customers. This is about people with allergies. It's also about religious discrimination. Like, if people are on halal chicken stock, absolutely, isn't suitable. So that's like a deep betrayal.
Yeah, the religious thing isn't big interest, isn't it? Yeah, that is an amazing thing to do when you consider how
really
many people
deep
have
betrayal.
Yeah,
I would take a bet that it was halal chicken stock, because a lot of food companies today are naturally halal before that, because the Islamic market is so large. Huge proportion of Nestlé's products.
Nora really going there.
Nora is owned by Unilever, I think, and that's a very conscientious company. If I was betting, I'd bet that it was halal.
But I think what's so disturbing
is still chicken, which
is still chicken. You're dead right there, Matt. Let's get them on
that. The assistant manager told the owner, and the reason this came out is the owner fired the assistant manager for trying to bring this to light. So you have this notion of like this whistleblower essentially in this restaurant saying this is unethical, this is ridiculous, and the owner trying to protect the chef. And that's the only reason the story came out, which is
okay. Let's move on. Now, it's not that many years, Rose, since you probably did your post-leaving cert party.
Oh,
I have to admit, I think I've been trolled by the production team who decided to put this on today, because I have a daughter who's currently on one present.
Anxiety.
Yeah, they're just trying to make me completely and utterly anxious at present. But there are all sorts of warnings for good reasons. One coming from people saying, look, be careful of the amount you drink, particularly if you've been so stressed for the last few months working hard, you have low alcohol tolerance. The second is this crazy thing where, and I did say to her before she went, two things I'm worried about: balconies and swimming pools.
Yeah.
The combination is something I didn't actually go into.
Yeah, so there's two issues that combine here. So there's students going on leaving cert holidays, and the combination of being dehydrated, of not eating well, of being in a new environment, and then having this kind of party atmosphere leads people to get incredibly drunk. And so there's a lot of alcohol poisoning happening on these holidays anyway.
It's excellent advice, isn't it?
Dangerous.
Really, I thought it was really good advice to give to a young person. Exactly what you just said. Really, really good advice to give.
To do that?
Yeah. No, I mean, like, you're going on your first holiday, maybe
without your parents.
Yeah. You are old enough to drink in a bar in Spain. But don't go on the first night when you're really tired, really stressed.
Yeah.
You haven't had anything to eat. You haven't had anything. I thought it was excellent advice. You're going to have a drink. Have a drink. But why don't you think about it in this way? Wait till the second day and maybe build yourself, have something to eat, get some sleep and so on.
I think this is the thing. I think we have to start having realistic conversations with teenagers about alcohol, because I think there's a lot of fear mongering around alcohol, and understandably, like, 1,000 deaths every year in Ireland are caused by alcohol. But I think you need to say to teenagers, I understand the appeal of having a drink. I understand that you want to have a good time. Inhibitions are lower. You'll do something silly. It'll be fun. You'll have a flirt with someone you fancy. But look at why you're drinking and what you want to get out of drinking. Because everyone has a point, maybe two drinks in, that they're at their most hyper and they're most silly and they're most fun. And after that, it gets messy. And I think you need to say to teenagers, this is how alcohol affects you. This is the time it takes that it will kick in. So if you have five drinks over the course of 5 hours, you might have a lovely night. If you have it within an hour, you're suddenly going to be very drunk and very messy. It's not going to be fun.
We don't, in UCD, and I think it's the same in most of the universities and the institutes take higher education, Matt. The university or the institute will not pay for any alcohol-related events anymore. So the days of bringing students for a pint, that people don't do that for a variety of reasons.
And do you allow this sort of drink-fueled freshers' weeks and things like that?
Look, students are adults, Matt, and I'm not speaking on behalf of UCD, as I've said here before, but students are over 18, they are free to drink, Matt, and there's not a lot we can do with that. But the university will not pay for it. But what we say to people as a group of colleagues is, could you please look after each other when you're out there and you're doing this? Make sure everybody gets home, everybody goes out and everybody gets home. But could I report, Matt, to you as a parent? I think our kids are the same age. Young people today, it seems to me, are drinking less.
They are.
And the drunkenness that maybe we experienced when I was, you know, left school, that is not the same as it used to be. The use of recreational drugs is not what it was 5 or 10 years ago. And promiscuity in sexual terms, that does not happen in the way that it used to 10 years ago.
What's the evidence for that?
The age of the first sexual experience has actually gone up a year in the past few years for women, and it stayed the same. So for lads, it tends to be 17. I will say, a lot of this is self-reported, so I don't believe all the lads. But for women, it's actually gone up. So it's now 19 when it used to be 18.
Well, Matt, my life operates around three age groups. So I have the same age groups. So 18-year-olds who come in first year, then 23-year-olds who come to the graduate school, and 30-year-olds do the MBAs. So my entire life has been 25 years of these three age groups. And they are very different today than they were 25 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. Drink less drugs. I'm not saying no drink, and I'm not saying no drugs, yeah, and I'm not saying no sex. It's just less, and it's a lot, exactly as you said, Ro, it's a lot more sensible than it used to be. So I'd be careful about what you say to young people, because they still think if you're over 30, you're an old person. But be careful what you say to them. Why don't you trust them? You trusted your daughter to go, Matt. I would trust her, sensible young woman. Trust her friends. She's got good friends to look after each other. That's the most important
thing.
It's
about having these conversations of empowering young people and saying, what do you want out of this experience, and helping them make healthier decisions.
The only thing, I mean, I do worry a little bit about, I worry. But anyway, you get things like the all-in packages where the drink is part of the package. So that said, I suspect a lot of that alcohol is watered down, which is a good thing as well. But this thing about people jumping off balconies into pools, this mad phenomenon. Now, hopefully there aren't that many Irish kids getting involved in that, but it seems to be a big thing with the English and the Germans and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's actually gotten to the point where there's this Mallorca-based group who have created a league where they're highlighting the amount of tourists who are jumping off balconies, usually to jump into a pool or to jump to another balcony, and are falling and either injuring themselves or dying. And it's the league, it's like a soccer table. Like, there are points aligned for who gets injured and who dies and what country they're from, which sounds terrible, but I think it's a really interesting way of highlighting this really ridiculous and pervasive issue, because it's happening more and more. Like, there was an 18-year-old Swedish man who fell 10 feet from a balcony. In June, there was a 19-year-old British man who fell from 26 feet and broke his ankle. And then there was a 35-year-old German man who was also seriously injured after falling from a second floor balcony. So this is happening again and again, and is obviously incredibly dangerous. Well, I think the idea of the league imposing shame and highlighting this.
I think it's actually one of those things you shouldn't talk about, because it actually gives young people ideas. And in this case, the injuries are relatively minor, sprain an ankle or something like that. But in actual fact, when you come back to, and I won't speak about UCD at all, if you come back to higher institutions in September, and unfortunately somebody doesn't come back, occasionally they lose their lives or they end up with very serious life-changing injuries. Mm-hmm. So this one of those ones, I don't think we should publicise it at all, because it gives particularly young men, I think, who do crazy things at that 18 and 19, we shouldn't publicise it at all.
There's a story about Toy Story 4, which, tell us about it. Apparently, some people are accusing it of being racist.
Yeah, so there was an appearance on Radio 4's Saturday Review, and Stella Duffy, who's a writer and a theatre director, accused the film of being racist, and says, what on earth are Disney doing having a film that has no leads that are black characters? And yes, there are black actors voicing characters, and she's referring to Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele, but they are yellow and they're green and they're plush, and how can they think that's all right now? So people are getting very reactive about this and saying this is a ridiculous accusation. I think what people are losing is that there's the common understanding of the term racist is like if you're literally saying terrible things to people of color. But racism can also be upholding the default position that white people are the norm and everyone else are lesser. And Toy Story, it has like figurine toys and they are all white. And they could have, you know, the importance of representation in toys. You see little girls, for example, who for the first time had a black doll after Black Panther came out, and how moved they were and how important that was for them. So representation is important. It would have been really easy for Pixar to put in a black doll in this. However, I will say, across the board, Pixar are incredible for creating films about weirdo communities, whether it's of toys, of chickens, of like fish with disabilities, and creating the sense of this isn't about heteronormative family. That's not how our societies work. It's about communities coming together and oddballs coming together and working for our strengths.
It's very hard not to think that this is an oversight on their part, though. And I think one of the big coming trends in the next couple of years is how we deal with people who have, you know, physical disabilities. Mm-hmm. Also, and a lot of people, you know, if you go to the American Doll store on used to be on Fifth Avenue, they have dolls that have various physical difficulties. It's the opportunity to have an actual black doll in this, I think, or a black character in this, was a real missed opportunity.
Well, sorry, the black
That's
characters
the life that we
are
live
actually
in.
The bad guys.
Yeah, well,
not in Toy Story 4. No, they're
they aren't they.
Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele voice Plushy and Ducky.
Yeah, but sorry, I would have thought, aren't the characters that protect, I can't remember the name of the doll that they go to.
Gabby.
Yeah.
No, she's not.
Oh, they're not. Sorry. No,
she's not.
Sure, but the guys around her.
Oh, the ventriloquist dolls.
Yes.
No, they're not black. Are they?
Okay, no. Right. They're the bad guys.
Missed opportunity to present a new reality, Matt. And I think when you get as big as Pixar and as powerful as they are, I don't think you actually have that opportunity. Physical disability people, I need to get that one out as well. That has to be part of this. And that both of those would have been really
easy
for them to
do. A little clip I want to play from the first Toy Story, which is, I think, the way a lot of people are actually regarding this particular row. Let's hear it.
Emperor Zurg has been secretly building a weapon with the destructive capacity to annihilate an entire planet. I alone have information that reveals this weapon's only weakness. And you, my friend, are responsible for delaying my rendezvous with Star Command. You are a toy! You weren't the real Buzz Lightyear, you're an action figure! You are a child's plaything! You are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity. Farewell. Oh yeah, well, good riddance, you loony.
Okay, I had to take that.
It was nice to listen to it, but
can I just say this overlaps with something that's becoming more and more evident in sci-fi and fantasy films. So if you look at films like Guardians of the Galaxy, they'll often have black actresses like Zoe Saldana, but they'll literally paint those actresses green or blue or a different colour. And so it's this idea of we have representation in terms of black actors, but we're not allowing them to be black. And I think that's a similar idea that they're playing with. They've hired black people. Why not have recognisably black characters?
Yeah, I try to find something that Pixar might have said about this because, you know, for a movie to take off in China these days, it has to have Chinese actors, no Chinese characters. And this, as far as I know, I'm sure Pixar did it for a reason because they're not stupid, right?
There's a listener here who says, well, we had black dolls growing up. They were called gollywogs and they got rid of them over racism and now they want them back. Madness.
No, we definitely don't want gollywogs back. We want Barbies that also represent girls of colour.
But of course, the problem with the gollywogs was actually that phrase became used as a racist term and then it was represented in a racist fashion on British television, which is what the problems with children having a black or any kind of racial doll is not a problem. It's how then it's represented in society. That's our responsibility.
Okay. Well, actually, Damien, because you're big into marketing and retailing, what do you make of this store in Wexford that's got in trouble because of its Black Friday ad promotion?
I think the journalist who wrote this story should also be accused of racism, Matt, because...
Hold on a second.
No, wait, Matt, come on. This is crazy.
Okay, let's be very careful because I'm not accusing anyone of racism.
This is a report from the
Employment Appeals. Yeah. The Advertising Standards Authority.
There are some things that we shouldn't discuss and we shouldn't report on. I think this is one of them. There's no way that an adult today would not know that this is deeply offensive to a black person. You better explain what it is.
So basically, a
Wexford tool shop, unnamed, Matt, I don't know where it is.
It is named Smith's Home Value.
Okay, well then let me take back again the suggestion that the journalist might have been racist also, Matt, if I could do that unequivocally. But basically the person in the store, I don't know whether it was the owner, did what they, I think in the old days they used to call blacked up, dressed all in black and then blacked their face in like the black and white minstrels people of a certain age will remember. Now what he's suggesting is that he was celebrating the win over the All Blacks and also suggesting or supporting a Black Friday weekend where he has half price something or other in his store, but I just can't believe, Matt, that somebody, an adult today, or
and in
reasonable
fairness,
knowledge,
it was reported upon because it was a complaint to the Advertising Standards Authority, which I think found against the store. Yeah.
Which was upheld, absolutely. Yeah. And I think what you're saying
is extraordinary.
Right. The ability, because I think Smith Home Value can, I believe, kind of disingenuously claim that they didn't realise this was offensive. But I think if you're addressing, he also did his interpretation of the hack out, which basically meant that he was in blackface and sticking out his tongue, which is taking this traditional war dance by the Maori, who are Indigenous people, and turning it into a quite offensive, reduced gimmick. And it's treating blackface as it has historically been treated, as treating blackness itself as a costume and a joke and being offensive with it. And the idea that you can say, oh, I didn't know this was offensive. Sometimes the ability to be ignorant, to be unaware of the history and consequences of racial bigotry is a privilege and it's a choice. Yeah. How do you get to today without realising that blackface is offensive? That becomes a choice.
Now, of course, we have the Pride weekend coming up here in Ireland and it's internationally. A lot of marches tomorrow. But here's, I suppose, is this a snowflake backlash? Boston looking to have a straight pride parade, Roll?
Yeah, these organisers are saying that they're not anti, they're not anti-gay, they're pro-straight. Do you know what else is pro-straight? The world. Society is pro-straight. Everything is pro-straight. So the idea of having a parade to celebrate this, the parade is your life. So this, of course, is a deeply homophobic parade that is happening. It's a homophobic protest. And I think, I really hope that permissions aren't given. The mayor has come out and said they won't attend if the parade goes forward, but that licenses and permissions are given on the basis of the logistics rather than the theme of it, which I also don't believe, because things are shut down if they're seen as incitement to hatred, and absolutely a straight pride. It is an exercise in hatred.
It's like the Ulster Pride thing in Dublin a few years ago. It was not intended to do anything. Of course, you know, people from Ulster are entitled to the Pride, and we would be proud of Ulster in many ways also.
But it was trolling.
It was done. Well, it was done with the intention of causing trouble in Dublin city centre. And I can't believe this is happening in Boston. I mean, one of the greatest, most equal cities in the world. It's a deliberate attempt to cause, I think, physical harm to people, because, of course, obviously, pride protesters will come out to protest against
because
this.
Because the implication of this is that straight people are being discriminated against, which is not
true. No evidence for whatsoever.
But I think that's the thing. If you've grown up with privilege, equality can feel like oppression, because these people genuinely believe that other people having rights is taking something away from them, which, it absolutely is not. But I think if you look at incidents like Charlottesville, where people were saying, oh, I'm not racist, I'm just pro-white, and then it turns into a lethal riot where
exactly
people are killed. That's exactly what they're hoping, that there will be a counter protest. They're hoping violence.
The good news is the Irish aren't organising, and it seems like Mayor Marty Walsh, who's one of us, Matt, is not attending, which is good news.
Very good. Actually, as you mentioned that, a movie you recommended to me ages ago, which I finally only got to see last weekend, Black K Klansman.
Yes.
It's brilliant in the way it finishes using the Charlottesville to show how things haven't changed from the period in the movie of the 1970s. Yeah. Like, I watched it with one of my teenage daughters, who was just absolutely shocked at the way that was society was as recently as the 1970s. And as somebody like David Duke can still be a significant figure in American life. Okay, listen, we're out of time. Thank you very much, Roe McDermott, for being with us today. Instead of doing the movies for us, we look forward to talking to you again next week. And Professor Damian McLaughlin, thank you very much for being with us as well.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.